We have more Inside Wealth and Out right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW San Francisco. We're here with Alex Batakos here on Inside Wealth, who wrote a fantastic book called Prisoners of Our Thoughts, specifically on the principles outlined by Viktor Frankl, who wrote one of the 10 most meaningful books of the 20th century called Man's Search for Meaning. And we're really talking about bringing meaning into the workplace. So, Alex, why don't we get started here and take a look at, you know, one, why did you decide it was important to bring Viktor Frankl's principles into the workplace?
Well, let's think about, and I hope your listeners are thinking about this as well, how much of our lives is spent either in the workplace, at work, or doing some kind of work, and it doesn't necessarily even have to be paid work. It could be volunteer work. You know, we spend most of our waking hours somehow doing some version of work.
Well, so might as well enjoy it and obviously find meaning in it. So I guess that's
absolutely.
Well, the other
side of it is that our work lives cannot be separated from our personal lives, even though we try to do that. We try to look at work-life balance. And so if we're really miserable in our work lives, it is going to spill over into our personal lives with our family or friends, our personal health and well-being. So I'm really encouraging people to focus on a healthy workplace and a healthy work life, not just for the purposes of productivity, but more for their health and wellness and those around them.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. Actually, we have Hal Adler on later today, and in one of his prior shows from the Great Place to Work Institute, said the number one correlation in their studies of all the indices they look at and what determines a great place to work, the number one indicator is how people respond to the comment, "My employer cares about me as a human being."
Uh-huh.
So it's amazing how simple it becomes in terms of creating that environment. And obviously, having a sense of meaning is everything. In fact, you go on in the book to say that meaning is everything. And it's true whether we drive a bus or run a corporation, that this is really an expression of our body, mind, and spirit. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. Well, you actually touched upon this in your bowl of stew. When you start talking about the fact that how we respond to different situations, ultimately when we dig deep, I refer to it as existential digging, as we dig deep into the core values that really matter the most to us and drive us, is that we do find out that we are connected to the world around us in intimate and really revealing ways. And if you think about logotherapy, which is the form of psychotherapy and the school of thought that Prisoners of Our Thoughts tries to bring to the everyday world, logotherapy, actually the word logo in logotherapy means therapy through meaning, but logo actually has ancient Greek definition that actually means spirit or soul. And so part of what Viktor Frankl was trying to do was not just bring meaning to his psychotherapy practice, but he was trying to bring spirituality. He was trying to help people realize that spiritual energy that connects us all can help bring health and wellness to our personal lives and our work lives. And that's a large part of what these principles that I write about try to do.
We are here with Alex Batakos, who wrote Prisoners of Our Thoughts, as well as an active consultant with the Innovation Group. And Alex, you mentioned that you touched very briefly upon this notion of will to meaning. Can you elaborate on that? Because, I'm not sure everybody understands what that is.
Okay. Well, let me preface that by saying that Viktor Frankl's basic premise is, and mine as well, is that the search for meaning is the primary intrinsic, not extrinsic, but intrinsic motivator of all human beings. So it's not about money. It's not about the extrinsic things that, again, traditionally we define happiness and success with, but it's about what matters inside of us. And so if we think about that as the primary intrinsic motivator, and whether you believe right now, and if you read my book, I'm sure by the time you're done with it, you will believe this, you'll realize that this meaning is really the stuff that drives us. Because when things really start to go bad, we start to disengage. And it's not just in the workplace. We see this with students in schools. We see this with people who are in stressful situations, including crises like, you know, natural disasters and so forth, is that people start to wonder, you know, what's going on with my life, and they feel that their life is coming out of control. The more that we can bring meaning back into focus, the more we will engage. And so in the workplace, for example, I believe, and this is one of the reasons why this is so important to the Innovation Group, is that meaning drives engagement. employee engagement, engagement with our customers, and so forth. And then engagement is what drives performance and ultimately innovation. So if we can create meaningful experiences at work between our coworkers, with our supervisors, with our customers, with our students, with our patients, you know, wherever we may be working, we're much more likely to perform with passion, and we're much more likely to be creative and innovative.
So the will to meaning is that it starts with each of us to have this this dedication, focus, and willingness to find meaning?
It's the idea that meaning, again, from a logotherapy perspective, meaning is really based on realizing or actualizing values. The more that we can do the kind of value clarification that we used to talk about way back in the 1970s and really understand what are the core things that drive me in my personal relationships, that matter to me with my families. You talked about, say, the relationship with your son, the relationship you have with your coworkers. Those are the core values. To the extent that we can identify and articulate those core values, we want to make sure that those core values, that we are focused on meaningful values, meaningful goals, and that we're authentically committed to those. And so when we find ourselves out of alignment, if our core values are that we really truly believe in mutual respect, and we work in an environment where we're not respecting each other, we're out of sorts. And so we either have to change that environment or we have to change. We have to move on. It's the same thing with our relationships and our families and our friendships and so forth. So the will to meaning, as I define it in Prisons of Our Thoughts, is the authentic commitment to meaningful values and goals. And so we need to understand what are those values, and there are exercises in my book and the work that I do to help us do that. And what are the meaningful goals? And it could be corporate-wide goals. I mean, are they meaningful? If you're a food company, are you committed to, for example, feeding the planet? Are you committed to providing products that are healthy for your customers as opposed to just adding new colors and new flavors that basically are hurting people and promoting, say, unhealthy lifestyles?
Well, it seems to me, as one humble observer of both individuals and corporate activities, that there do seem to be a couple of operating thoughts overlaid upon people's minds. Uh-huh. One is, you know, what's in it for me? Uh-huh. Another is, it's too good to be true. So when we invite people in to consider bringing their, let's say, body, mind, and spirit all together, uh-huh, and all focused and in harmony together, and to have, as you mentioned, this authentic commitment to meaningful goals, a lot of people have somehow been conditioned to believe that that's a luxury item, and that because they're in survival mode in some kind, and it's all about making next quarter's numbers or making the bonus or making the quota, that some of those values get sacrificed.
Yeah. And I definitely agree with you to a certain extent. I mean, obviously the observations that all of us and all your listeners, I mean, we can point to many, many examples where people kind of hang their meaningful values at the door before they enter the workplace, and they hope that they can find meaning when they're back with their families and their hobbies and so forth. And then when they go to work, they're just there driving, you know, and being driven by the bottom line and other, you know, kind of competitive types of things. And I agree with you. The challenge that we have is, to what extent can we take this idea that more and more people, not just the baby boomers, but, you know, the millennial generation, Generation X and Y and so forth, that this really crosses all the different generational divides, they're all looking for something more than just a paycheck, ultimately. And so to the extent that we can help people work in organizations and do meaningful things with their personal and their work lives, they're much more likely, the evidence shows this, to be happier, more fulfilled, and be healthier, and feel that they're doing something that matters. And those kinds of questions, I mean, it's been written about. Megatrends 2010, another book that I can refer to, I mean, pretty well establishes that the search for meaning is one of the megatrends of the 21st century. People want to know, is that all there is? Well, they want more than that. And so I think the idea is, you're absolutely right, we've got an uphill battle. But unless we do the things that I'm proposing and espousing, business will always have a bad name. People will always say, geez, you know, well, I did this for my career, but what I really want to do is something that's meaningful. I mean, ultimately, that has to change. And I think if we can be the vanguard, and I think your program helps to establish kind of a beachhead for this kind of thought, we can help transform the business world so that people respect it in a way that is meaningful.
We're here with Alex Patakos, PhD, author of Prisoners of Our Thoughts, and also the head of the Innovation Group, which has worked with a number of Fortune 500 companies and leading organizations to help them to innovate. And it looks like very much it's through focusing on meaning, which would stimulate engagement and innovation. Alex, are you finding that there are certain age groups? Because some people seem to, that may be more open to this conversation than others. And the reason why I ask is because some people seem to think that the search of meaning for meaning is one of these kind of cycles of maturity issues, where people in their 20s and 30s, they're less focused on meaning possibly and more focused on acquisition or finding out who they are on some other level. And once someone has a little bit of financial success under their belt or something else, kind of climbing up that some kind of hierarchy of needs things, that meaning is at the higher end of the pyramid, and that kind of survival and acquisition and some other form of material success is at the lower part.
Well, I mean, there's certainly some evidence that would suggest that people who are facing their mortality, they're more obviously looking at, okay, where am I, and again, where do I want to be, and is that all there is, are much more likely to ask these kinds of meaning-focused questions. At the same time, I've seen evidence from people in all age groups, not just people who are retired or close to death checking out, or people who are baby boomers getting ready to retire. I've seen all age groups really asking these questions. If you look at some of the younger people, they don't want to just work for a job, for 25 years, get the gold watch, and retire. They want to do something that really means, they want to be treated with respect. They want to do something that really makes a difference. So not everybody, is going to necessarily say that the search for meaning is important to them because they've reached a certain age bracket.
We've got a financial situation right now which doesn't look all that pretty by many measures, and people may be losing their jobs. You mentioned Michigan. There's a lot of people out there who may be under financial duress. What can you offer them, or how do you apply the principles in the book when you're up against the financial wall?
Well, if we think about the most catastrophic situations, from being in Auschwitz a la Viktor Frankl, or you think about, even Senator John McCain, politics aside, Viktor Frankl was actually, he made reference and acknowledged Viktor Frankl's work on the first page of his autobiography, Faith of My Fathers, because it was Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning that helped him survive his experience as a prisoner of war in Vietnam, to situations that are less catastrophic but still there all along our personal and work lives, whether it's, having a tough time in the economy, to having our house burns down, to getting an illness, or whatever. Every one of these situations can be put on a continuum from the most horrific and catastrophic to something that's not so important. We didn't get invited to the prom, say, for example. I don't know. And that, to that person, to that kid, he or she's life, that could be very catastrophic.
Right, devastating, yes.
Yeah, it's devastating. So, but the idea is that every one of those situations along that continuum, again, holds within it at least a seed of meaning. And so it's up to us to kind of find out what that is. And so one of the principles, the first principle in my book, and the first principle that obviously that Viktor Frankl is most well known for, is that ultimately, whatever the situation may be, we ultimately have the freedom to choose our attitude. And so the first thing I'm recommending that your listeners do is that no matter what the situation is that those of us who believe that the sky is falling, those of us who believe that in our lives the sky is falling, but those of us who say, you know what, I have a can-do attitude, I'm going to get through this, I can turn around and look at the positive of what my situation, no matter how bad it is. It could be we just had the anniversary, the first anniversary of the massacre at Virginia Tech, and I read an interview with one of the parents who is really trying to celebrate his daughter's life rather than focusing on her death, and trying to move on with his family because he has other kids and trying to figure out how to deal with this. Every situation has meaning, and what can he do now to celebrate and to advance his daughter's life? And the idea here is that we lose our job or the situation, the economy is so uncertain. There are meaning seeds in those situations too. And some of us who can take that situation and turn it into some sort of human achievement will become the next Bill Gates or Microsoft or an entrepreneur, or maybe change jobs or careers and move to something else, maybe change locations. go through retraining. Maybe it'll change the way we relate to our families in a positive, meaningful way. The idea is that if we are open to those opportunities, those windows of opportunity are there for us because there are seeds of meaning in every one of those situations. But those of us who look at it and say, it's my boss's fault, it's the president's fault, it's the economy's fault, or whatever, they're the ones that become prisoners because they're prisoners in their own thoughts, but they're also holding others prisoner in their thoughts. And so they're going to get stuck. So what I'm trying to say here is that this first principle is fundamental to taking action because part of what we need to do is change our mental mindset so that we can look for those opportunities rather than looking for all the excuses about why we can't do something.
We've kind of bumped up against the time limit here. I want to thank you so much for giving us all the opportunity to have the freedom to choose our attitude and to remind us of that. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Please come back. We have more Wealth to Share right here on KNEW 910 AM San Francisco.